keeping the station going and active with all kinds of people coming in. And now you've been exploring the radio. So we appreciate everything you're doing and saying. And we're going to turn it over to Sean right now. Are you ready?
It's 7 o'clock and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. Douglas, Holly.
Hello.
Holly in the house is here. And Douglas.
Yes.
What have we got for the remainder of the time we have here?
Oh, we're going to do a little bit more music that we have. And we also have a quick chat that we're going to. And then something.
How quick
that,
is it? I'm hoping it's at least a half hour.
Oh, well, no. You and I are going to have a quick chat and include Holly in it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But one of the funny things, and Holly, I'll just let you know that, see, you have an impact on tonight's show.
Yeah.
And also an impact on tonight's show happened on Sunday when I was having a meal with friends as we were getting ready to go and watch the CFL Grey Cup game. And while we were sitting talking, I was telling them all about some of the musicians that I've met here at CFRC. And I guess it was almost a year ago when I sat down at the microphones in the station here and chatted with Alyssa. We're going to introduce Alyssa later, but her music is what we're going to talk about. And in fact, I'm going to do the interview with her and we're going to listen to some of her music. And Sean was saying, how long will that be? And that'll be about, we'll start that around 20 after 7. And we'll play.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right through till 8 o'clock.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I had fun at the interview. It's kind of like what Holly's doing right now.
Wait a minute. Alyssa? Alyssa who?
Yes, we'll tell you later. Yeah, I'm going to keep you
like
on your toes, Sean. You're going to have to listen.
All right, then.
So, Holly, what do you think he's going to be? He's looking on his computer there and trying to find something news for us, right?
No, there is no news.
Man.
There really isn't. Like, you would almost think there would be, but no, like post office still on strike.
Okay.
That's not new.
The check's in the mail.
Check's in the mail. Hey, we should play that. Do we have that? We should.
Say some maybe funny memes and stuff.
We should. Do we have that?
Dude.
Checks in the mail, or is it on CD?
It's on a CD. Oh. You'd send me off to look for it, right?
No. I did just that would be appropriate, I guess. Although that's not what they were singing about.
Well, they want to go on strike before Christmas. I saw this meme the other day, and it was like Santa Claus. Is just an Amazon driver, and his only reindeer is in telecom. I feel like that's kind of accurate right now.
It is. An avalanche.
Where?
Never mind. It says an avalanche of money.
Oh, not an avalanche.
That's the new budget, I think.
Oh.
Oh, no.
That's
the... One of the questions that I did get was about the changes that are happening in boil water advisories across the country. And, you know, you, Sean, and I, and all the guests that we've ever talked about boil water problems across the country, we've been doing this since 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Not every week, but some weeks. But I heard a couple of politicians who want to be running the government say that there's no reason for a boil water advisory. Just tell everybody, just boil your water. You'll be fine. Or we'll put chlorine in the water. You know, and I'm thinking.
They do anyways.
Well, yeah, that's right. Some people do anyway. But if you're living in parts of Northern Ontario or Northern Manitoba, they don't have clean water because somewhere upstream from where they're living in their intake for the water for that community, the indigenous community. The problem is that the water is not fit for drinking.
When I was in elementary school, our water was like a different color every single day. So they just had us, the teachers purchase plastic water bottles and give out to the students.
Right?
Because, yeah, the and this was
kind of Negus,
Shannonville area.
Uh-huh.
When I was in elementary school, probably like, I don't know, in the early 2000s, early 2010s. And we couldn't drink the water at our elementary school. So we had to have bottled water and stuff like that because it was just a different color every day. And so it wasn't safe to drink. So, yeah, there is that, I guess.
No, I wish we had that story when we were talking about it back in 2010.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
yeah.
Because, we've had people complain that we shouldn't talk about it because we don't experience these things. But here you are.
It's a real
close
thing.
To
yeah.
Our station.
It's a very real thing that
right.
has happened in elementary schools and high schools throughout anywhere. Like when I was living, even in Belleville and stuff like that, we had issues with the water in my high school and how it was just unsafe to have drinking fountains and stuff like that, which is really unfortunate because, I don't know, the money's all there. It just depends on how they use it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Priorities, right?
Priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, that issue of boil water advisories is going to go away. Just because the new people coming in, they think they want to be able to do it. They're just going to tell everybody, we're telling you now, boil your water, and, you know, we don't have to do the advisories anymore, and you won't have to measure it. And, you know, we're seeing some of that in Ontario right now with changes to the conservation authorities' responsibilities across the province, taking away the protection for septic fields and that sort of thing, or building a new house, you don't need to have the certificate from.
You don't need to have
Each municipality is going to decide for themselves.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So
I'm kind of worried about like communities that like, okay, what if you're, this may be kind of a freak assumption, but it's like, okay, what if you're downhill from a cemetery or something mm-hmm. like that? You don't want to have dead body water running into community,
yeah.
obviously.
Or it could be a garbage dump nearby. That
yeah,
causes
garbage
that problem,
dump.
Or,
well, there is that problem too.
Yeah.
Or a chemical plant or anything yeah. like that.
Well,
yeah,
those are the ones we really worry about, right?
Yeah,
chemical plant. Was it the last week we were talking about a First Nation that is considering having
the nuclear waste.
Yeah, a nuclear waste facility on their
territory.
Their territory. Yeah, I don't know what happened there because it's not in the news, but that would be a concern as well.
Mm-hmm. It's also like a concern about they push electric cars so much like that, but there is really no way to dispose of the lithium batteries besides dumping them and blowing them up in the ocean. So they're just
there was a company here in Kingston that
carried them everywhere
that was recycling batteries. They were extracting the chemicals and the minerals out of the batteries. So
yeah, like I heard something that you have to like call somebody to dispose of them. Like you can't just dump them anywhere. Like if your Tesla dies in your driveway, you have to call somebody to come and dispose of it. You can't just like dump it away.
Now that's interesting because during that hurricane in the United States,
Milton.
there were some floods going on, and people who had all electric cars some of those electric cars were exploding mm-hmm. in the water.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And
well, like, look at Cybertrucks. Cybertrucks just explode on the highways sometimes. Mm. So yeah.
Apparently, the water, there was salt water having an impact mm-hmm. on the battery system.
Yeah.
Seriously, I did not hear that.
It's a real issue, I guess.
That gives us a new one to explore this. We'll do it in 2025, okay?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Maybe we could get one of those cars. We can test it.
Let's get a Cybertruck, yeah.
We've got a department over here across from CFRC where they've been testing the electric cars for many years now, and I won't tell you how many tow trucks, flatbed tow trucks, have been picking up the cars off the 401 and bringing them back because they didn't make it and ran out of power. But anyway, that was what they were testing. What's the range on these vehicles? So. But I think, Sean, we're going to go to music unless you have more news.
No.
Okay.
No,
Holly, do you have more news? Or?
I have no news. Oh, okay. I just have a video I would like to show you guys after.
We're going to go back to Krista Couture.
Krista Couture.
Yeah, and you have it set there, number six.
Number six.
It's the last one.
Waitlist Lullaby by Krista Couture right now.
I wake from dreaming and call your name into the night. If I keep believing, will it be true? I've your heart, I've your heart. I wake from dreaming.
CFRC's funding drive is now underway and running through December 31st. Donate today and get amazing CFRC prizes. For every $5 you donate, you also earn a ticket for one of our weekly raffle draws featuring prizes from local businesses including Old Farm Fine Foods, The Screening Room, Smokes Poutinerie, Studio 330, Tango Nuevo, Terra Natural Foods, The Toucan, The Wit, and YGK Thrift. Enjoy the benefits of donating. Give today via CFRC.ca.
My name is Stephen Brooks. I'm an emergency doctor and researcher in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Queen's University. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest affects about 35,000 people across Canada every year. The sooner treatment begins, the higher the probability of recovery. Neighbors Saving Neighbors is a pilot program to improve survival for people who experience sudden cardiac arrest in Frontenac County. Let us teach you how to do CPR, Use an AED and become a lifesaver. Consider becoming a Neighbor Saving Neighbors volunteer.
Apply today at frontenacparamedics.ca.
Love listening to podcasts and have always wanted to start your own? CFRC can make that happen. Try podcasting today at CFRC 101.9 FM. Check out www.podcast.cfrc.ca for more information and the application form to get started.
To you, $16 might be inconsequential. Hardly covers parking or a few cappuccinos. But put $16 in the hands of Feed Ontario, with their bulk buying power for over 1,200 food banks and hunger relief organizations, and that $16 can provide breakfast for a hungry child every morning for a month. Please, give now at feedontariotogether.ca for the big change your pocket change can make.
Be brave with your crazy hair and be crazy like nobody's there. Be happy, just be yourself, don't be afraid, just be. Why be a bird if you can't fly? Just
so that was Mimi Abansuan with the song Brave. So what's up next, guys?
Well, Sean, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Sean and Holly. I'll tell you a little bit about this next guest that we're going to have.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Who's that?
And it's Alyssa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dalbar-Sawchuk. And she's going to tell us a little bit about herself and how she got into music and where it's taken her. And we're going to play two of her songs after our chat. But it all comes up because last Sunday we're sitting with our friends and having a meal, and they were asking what do we put on the radio this week. And I happened to say, oh, well, let's see. I have a little discussion about diabetes, and we'll save that one for next week.
Uh-huh.
Because isn't November Diabetes Awareness Month?
I don't know.
I know we had a diabetes
Could
week.
Could be. So,
but we're going to, at the end of the month, we're going to talk about it because it reaches into what's going to happen for a lot of people where they're going to have lots of baking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
they're hard to stay away from sweets in these months.
Yeah, that's right. But we'll talk a bit about it. And we have a guest for that one, a dietitian. So that'll be an off one. But anyway, what else are you going to do? And I said, that we were talking about Métis music, because I was going to just play two or three Métis songs, a reel or a jig or something like that. And
I looked it up, yes. This is Diabetes Awareness Month.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. So we have one more week here at Aboriginal Voices where we can still get it in the right time.
It almost got past us.
Yeah. So the question came up was, what makes a jig different from a reel? And, it's most, Sean, you're laughing over there in the Don Ross studio. I can believe it.
Doesn't that got something to do with curling?
No. I love that.
I don't know the difference.
No.
Yeah.
What?
No, it's got to do with a fiddle music.
Oh, okay.
That kind of jig. It's a lot of fun. Go look it up. You can have some fun trying to figure out what's the difference between a reel and a jig. Well, here we're going to have as our guest in a few minutes. She's going to, Alyssa is going to tell us about it, but she's going to talk about how she got started in the music world. So it'll be quite amazing. And, I had a chance last November to sit down with Alyssa and do this conversation. And you'll hear it in her laughter, and you'll hear it. Yeah, she had a lot of fun and really enjoyed, like you did, you're doing here today.
Yeah.
Holly, just being part of sitting there chatting, and we sat in the control room and talked, and I recorded this. So this is a special going out to friends of mine, Al and Sybil. And this is an answer to your question, Al. What's the difference between a jig and a reel? I think of a reel as being something that everybody does in a group.
Like a reel as in R-E-E-L?
That's right. Yeah. And so, you all set?
Born ready, Doug.
All right. And the songs we're going to play, let's see. Oh, Tacantro. And it's a reel.
Okay.
And then the last one will be Chanson du Real. That's the guy's name, okay?
Okay.
Yep. So.
Like Louis?
Like Louis.
Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yes. He's got his own statue.
Real.
We won't go into that now. All right, here we go. You all set?
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa, I'm glad to have you here at CFRC, right here in our studios with us, live here in Kingston, Ontario. And I want folks to get to know you a little bit before we dig into your work these days. Tell me where you grew up.
Right. Yeah. Tanchi, Alyssa, Nishnikashon. My name is Alyssa. I'm originally from Winnipeg, also known as Saint Buddy Fast, also known as Treaty One. I have Red River Métis roots that connect back to Louis Riel's ancestors. And I also have Ukrainian, Belgian, and Franco-Manitoban roots. And my Métis family names are No and Husset. And I grew up playing the fiddle. My parents got the idea as young university students to bring their child to violin lessons. And so started on Suzuki. And then by the time we left for Toronto or Tacaronto when I was 10, my mother was drawn to reclaiming her culture and specifically getting involved with Métis community events. And it was through that desire to reconnect that she brought us to come to know Métis fiddling and the repertoire and specifically connecting with Indigenous fiddle ally Anne Letterman, who also then connected us. And when I say us, I have three younger brothers who are also musicians. And so we started connecting with Anne, and then later on connected with Anne's mentors, including Lawrence Teddy Boy Houle, and also with John Arcan, the master of the Métis fiddle. And James Chichu is an incredible Cree fiddler from Moose Factory. And little by little, by reconnecting with that culture, we then learned more and more about the fiddle repertoire, and we began to get requests to perform as a quartet for events. And so my youngest brother basically grew up on the stage because there's about a 10-year difference between us. And, you know, at first it was just kind of cutesy. It was like we were trying to figure out, okay, you're going to play an open string here on the cello, because he played the cello. And we just figured out a way to, as, you know, we kind of grew up on stage as a quartet. And it really allowed for me to connect with my roots through this, the language of music that I always felt was a safe haven for me.
And when you did this in Toronto, there's a good group of people there who are supporting it all. But were you on stage and traveling around, or just in, you know, a lot of folks just have their own local community and they stay there?
Right. Yeah. No. We traveled. We got invited to play at the fifth anniversary of the Smithsonian Native American Indian Museum in Washington. We played for the Aboriginal Pavilion at the Vancouver Olympics. We've done a bunch of opening ceremonies for various Indigenous games that have happened over the years. So quite a bit of traveling. And we still sometimes do some traveling. Like my brother and I were in Timmins a couple weeks ago playing for a Métis event. And it's a joy to be able to give back to community in a way by showing up and making myself available to play this music.
There's so much more available, you know, in the last 10 years. You know, we're talking right now in 2023, but in the last 10 years, there's been a cultural change and a shift for acceptance of some of this music and some of the ideas and storytelling and people coming into their communities. So are you finding that as well everywhere you go across Canada?
Yeah, there's even more of a desire to highlight the fiddle, especially in Métis communities. And also not just highlighting the fiddle, but moving away from the typical four pieces that my elder said that he almost refused to play, which was Big John McNeil, Maple Sugar, Whiskey Before Breakfast, and St. Anne's Reel.
They've been played a few times and he doesn't want to do it again. Eh?
Yeah. But depending on the event that you go to, actually, the fiddle, old time fiddle, especially in Manitoba, you'll hear those songs on repeat. And you know, I think it's fine for it to be highlighted, but at the same time, I feel like there's so much vastness in the repertoire of Métis fiddle that it's nice to actually expand the ears' range for familiarity.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to you getting involved in writing your own music. And so how many have you been able to put together in the past 5-6 years?
I haven't written a whole lot on my own. It's more of a more recent thing. I'm often in a place of collaboration. However, this past year, I did write a piece for solo violin and string quartet called A Search for Resonance. And it was kind of my own exploration of our human experience here and where do we come from and where are we now? And using some of my own soundscape techniques from being a classical musician to also incorporating some Métis fiddle music. So that's a recording that's going to come out sometime next year that was written for Mayumi Zeiler. And she's a beautiful classical violinist and a former teacher of myself and one of my brothers. And I also wrote a couple of tunes that were published in the Royal Conservatory of Music's syllabus for violin. One of them is actually called Homage to the Red River. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Métis fiddle music, it's said that for each Métis fiddler, they have their own version of the Red River jig. So I kind of created my own classical-esque play on the Red River and was influenced by a recording from this older gentleman. Or I should say older recorded gentleman, Granny Fagna. He's passed on many, many years ago. However, he was one of the oldest fiddlers that Ann Letterman had documented way back when she was doing her studies. And it's really thanks to her that there's so much of the old repertoire still alive. However, the aliveness is only in recorded form. So that's only one part of it being alive. It being able to be performed live is another thing. And that's something that I'm working towards, like playing and extending the range of my repertoire, but then also passing it on, teaching the repertoire. It's one of the gifts that's been highlighted for me by my elders. I've been sort of given this nickname. I won't call it a spirit name because it's more of like it's being seen as having hummingbird energy. So that ability to navigate between the past, present, and future. And I do this in many different ways, like the fact that I've gone and had such a passion for learning the old music and then bringing it into now and then also sharing it, teaching it to the next generation. But I also say that my other futurist ability with the hummingbird energy is that I'm taking the Métis fiddle music to beyond where it existed before. For example, I'm playing it on viola. I've played it on electric fiddle with loops and effects. And so really bringing it to other spaces. I also did a collaboration with DJ Shub for an opening event where it was like Métis fiddle and like indigenous hip hop. Like, so cool.
Yeah, too clashing. and everybody loving it, right?
Yeah.
I see the passion in your face as you talk to me. I wish people could be seeing this. But one of the things that came up in my brain was, one, you mentioned you love teaching and being in the classroom teaching. But before we do that, we've got a lot of people who are at University of Queens or RMC, the Royal Military College here in Kingston, or even in the community colleges locally. And I'm just wondering, what advice right away would you give to some of the young people listening to you saying, this is your passion, music? They have passions, whether it's in music or something else, their heritage. What advice would you give them right now?
I would say one is know that your skills are always transferable. So for me, it was like At a certain point, I was really going towards a classical music career, and I was auditioning for orchestra positions. And eventually I realized that that wasn't really my thing. And so I thought more about, okay, what space does Alyssa want to occupy within this artistic space? And then it was, oh, I actually really am passionate about teaching. I'm also passionate about research. So bringing those two things together and offering something that is unique is something that I would recommend to those of folks who are pursuing an artistic career. Like, create your own space within, because there's limitless space within the artistic domain. So seeing that and being able to make up a space that nobody else but you can occupy, like knowing what your gifts are and shifting that focus in that direction, and sometimes knowing that it might work and it might not work.
Where did you get to go to school?
I initially was at the Royal Conservatory of Music during high school, and then for a couple of years after that. And then I took a few years off. I was kind of taking lessons with a former professor of U of T, and then I eventually ended up in Switzerland at a school in Lausanne, which is in the French part. And I spent 5 years there doing my undergrad and master's. And I was pretty focused on a classical career at that point. I had a lot of support and encouragement from my teachers. Like, also, I would say the other piece of this advice is, like, hearing that encouragement from the outside world and knowing that that is true also, and then pursuing from that place of, like, knowing and feeling encouraged. So given that, I continued to pursue this classical music career, but I also found that there was a part of me that wasn't fulfilled in that role, that had this, I want to say, rebellious side. And I just felt like it wasn't the fullest picture of me. It was a way to really cultivate technique that could allow me to express myself with limitless possibilities and also be able to write with limitless possibilities. Mm-hmm. But I knew that that I was destined to do something else. So I returned back after the studies in Switzerland. And at the time, I was traveling back and forth to do a lot of performances with my brothers. We played in Batoche, I remember. And one summer, returned back to Winnipeg to do many family events. So I was always returning back. And then I ended up at the University of Montreal to do my doctorate of music. Mm. And when I started my studies there, I was really kind of focused on how to interpret folk music within a classically composed piece. And at the time, I was still, I was teaching Métis fiddle workshops at schools occasionally, but I was not narrowly focused on Métis culture as a whole within my academic career, because I'd never really fused the two prior to that. So when I started, I was like, oh, maybe I should be learning Hungarian, because there's lots of Hungarian music in classical music. And then little by little, I realized, no, that's going to require years of learning, and I should go with what I actually know and have been learning about since I was young. So I then found a classical piece that had used the Red River Jig to show how one might take that classical piece and give it a Métis flair, folk flair. So really instructing somebody like myself who is classically trained but wants to adapt their way of playing to a fiddler's way of playing. So it's like untraining the tautness, like, mm-hmm. the pedagogy and going towards, like, how do I imitate somebody who's completely self-taught? Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting.
And actually, here's a question that came to me before when I was explaining that I'm going to be interviewing Alyssa. And the question is, what's the difference between a reel and a jig? because you've used that now interchangeably in essence, but I noticed that on the new CD that's coming out with in collaboration with the Sultans of String, both of them are reels.
Yes, and if the confusion is about the Red River jig, then that it has jig in the title because of its connections to Métis jigging, the form of dancing, but also there is scholars say that it's connected to this other piece from Quebec, La Grande Jig Simple, and that word jigue means to dance in French. It has nothing to do with the jig dance or 6/8 timing. So that's what makes the Red River jig kind of confusing in that sense. It's that title that gives us the illusion like, oh, it's going to be in 6/8 time, but it really isn't. It's a reel. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's helping a little bit. Okay. There are a lot of people out there saying, yes, yeah, I understand. Yeah. I'm going to have to play a few more for our audience, aren't I?
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. I guess so.
How can people find out about your music and where you're going to be? You're online on the web.
Yeah. My website is not quite as up to date. Alyssa Katrine with a K. .com. But I also am on Instagram. That's the easiest way. That's where I post the most up to date events. Although most of the time it's me supporting larger projects and being a part of something bigger. I kind of like that supportive role on stage because it just allows for me to do other things. And not spend less energy on being in charge of a big project because it's a lot.
But you enjoy playing music. It's obvious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention to a lot of the young people who are studying, you said that you studied in Lausanne in Switzerland. That's in French, right? And then you studied in Montreal, all in French?
It was a mix, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where did you learn the mischief?
Well, I didn't. My mischief is not actually fully there.
Okay, it's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress, and I'm learning bits and pieces of like the subtleties of French mischief. Mm-hmm. So there's communities like Timmins and Mattawa, Sudbury. These historic communities have their own version of French, which they call French Michif, or for them it's really just Michif. So that would be easier for me to learn than the Michif that it comes from the prairies. It has a lot more Cree in the the language. So I spent a bit of time with the Métis Nation of Ontario understanding the Métis languages or Métis language. Plus dialects situation. It's something, if somebody wants to study this, there's a topic.
Yeah, that's a topic for the grad chat folks. Yeah, we'll give that to them, yeah. Because they do a wonderful job in kind of checking to see what studies are being done by masters or PhD candidates or postdocs. And they talk all about what they're doing. So we'll pass that one on to them.
Good.
Without Christine. But this is the fun part. You're sharing with everybody your love of music, and I assume it's not just one instrument, the violin. What other instruments do you play?
Well, I play viola, and I've become to really find my voice also and singing a lot more. So I had thought about trying to learn other instruments. At this point, I'm experimenting more with looping and pedals, creating different sounds with my fiddle itself rather than like picking up an entire instrument from scratch. Because I have this inner self-critic that comes out and says like, that's crap. You know, so it was very good because I was able to figure out a way to play the violin in a way that my self-critic was like, yeah, that's fine.
But, yeah, just put the earphones off to the side and keep going, right?
Yeah.
Don't listen to it. Yeah. That's funny. Now, I want to ask you about the project that is in collaboration with the Sultans of String and Christopher McCool. And, you know, I've learned a fair bit about the project itself. But what's your involvement in it?
So my brother Conlon was the first one to get involved in my family. Because the four of us as Métis Fiddler Quartet are featured on the CD. And so my brother was very supportive in helping Chris get letters of support. And then eventually Chris put this album together. And then there was interest for concerts to come alive, for the whole project to come to the stage. And since I live in Toronto and there, you know, there's a need for a young feminine voice on stage, Chris thought that I should be a part of the touring team. So that's sort of how that all came to be. And we started rehearsing in this fall of last year. Reviewing the pieces and learning them back to back, forwards and backwards. And it's been a whole journey to get to know folks. When you're doing a long-term project and in an intimate language such as music, it really creates this beautiful space for connecting with other humans.
There's a great group of people that when I read through, I thought, oh my goodness, look at all these people. This is great, you know. And we've used some of the music from several of the people in the group, including, I was surprised because the Aboriginal Voices here at CFRC has been going since 1994, and every Tuesday night, and we've just been having fun and meeting people along the way and learning about new music. And when Mark and I did the first interview with the group that we're going through, I said, Najuan, we have your CD here at the radio station at CFRC. And he sat back in his chair. Oh, my. I was there in 2008. And so afterwards, I went into the archives here. And sure enough, it says, you know, summer of 2008. That it was stamped as being received here at CFRC. So this is great. And Don Ross was here even before that. He was at he came and sat in our very old studio that's way over on the other side of the station here, and spent half an hour with me, and then raced back. I took him back down to a concert he was putting together, and that night did the concert in one of the abandoned churches, and then a number of others in the group. So I'm really finding a difference. They're not all the same, none of them. And I'm finding that for you, coming in with your creativity, are you being energized by being with the others, or are you contributing to their changes?
Oh no, it's an energetic exchange and collaboration. I mean, the whole project is Indigenous collaboration, collaborators, collaborations. Of course I'm being energized, but I think it's like there's like a receptivity loop where we are all giving and receiving simultaneously. Like, it's just very flowing. Even though we're walking through the fire, it's turned into like some flowing water.
Yeah, let's hope that water doesn't put the fire out. Yeah, that's pretty funny when I started going through the songs and what's there and the title. I keep going back to the title of the whole project that's going to be on stage. I keep thinking, you know, somebody's got a sense of humor over there, you know, in that group, because there's sort of very, very gripping songs, and you have to not only hear it once. I find, this is my experience, is that when I listen to it several times over, I'm listening one time for how it takes me outdoors or reminds me to go thinking about outdoors, and other times it's the words. and I just listen to the words, and that gets me upset. So I have to go back to listening to being outdoors. But you know, it's been a really great opportunity for me, and I hope some of our listeners are enjoying it too.
And yeah, it's just a delight to be able to perform with these humans on stage. It's the Sultans, the guys in the Sultans are just so generous, safe, loving, kind, respectful humans. It's been nice for my nervous system as a woman to be around that kind of masculine energy, you know, because there's some stuff that sometimes gets brought to the surface, especially when you start spending lots of time with people. And it's been a really beautiful project for me to be involved with.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, not only on an artistic level, but on my own personal journey.
The interesting thing too is that we're going to take this back to you wanting to be or spending time teaching, is that in the afternoon of the 23rd, I think 1 o'clock, I think it is the time that school students are going to be in the Grand Theater here in Kingston. And they're going to participate. And my first thought, having been an elementary school teacher, or part of my career was that, and I thought, what's going to happen if I bring grade 2, grade 3, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-olds, and someone else brings a grade 7, 8 class, and, you know, we're looking at students 13, 14 years of age. Are you and all the rest going to be able to accommodate their interests and their listening, or are you just going to say, this one, the grade 2s, enjoy it, but we're focused on the grade 7, 8s?
I think in a show context, because I do my own kind of workshops and assemblies for schools where there's different age groups, and you just... Even instead of thinking about it that there might need to be some targeted learning, I think that you just figure out a way to have a show that can reach as many people as possible, and regardless of what they walk away with, the fact that they showed up is amazing. And the experience of being at a show is enough. For me, at least, when I think about it, because some days, like as a teacher, I'm wondering, okay, what did they actually walk away with? I never really know. At the end of the day, I always know that they heard music, and that's important because I think that's also something that is kind of dying off, is people going out to concerts. So having these opportunities for young folks to attend concerts, I think, is important, because it kind of gives them that experience that then they know what it's all about. Love that.
Alyssa, I appreciate all the time you've given us here, and your happy smile, your voice is just carrying the great ideas to a lot of people. So thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Chimigwetch, thank you for having me.
And I'm going to give the last word to you. Think of the young teenager who's struggling to get through this year. It's Christmas time. They've just finished all of their exams, and they're going to start up maybe some new ones later in the year, in January. What advice are you going to give to those folks?
Rest and know you did plenty enough this year. And say, I love you in the mirror. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Alyssa.
Thank you, Chimigwetch. Merci.